Chapter 2. I lie outstretched on the sofa, my head against the arm and my eyes closed. My thoughts move through my drowse in fantastic confusion. Consciousness hovers between waking and dream, and weariness like a shadow rides through my brain. Beyond, indistinctly, distant gunfire floats in. Shells pipe over softly, and the tinny ringing of gongs sounds nearer, announcing a gas attack. But before I can grope for my gas mask, the darkness recedes without sound. The earth against which my face is pressed dissolves before a feeling of warmth more bright. It turns again into the plush sofa cover on which my cheek rests. Dimly, deep down, I am aware it is home. The gas alarm of the trenches resolves into the subdued clatter of dishes, which my mother is setting out cautiously on the table. Then the darkness glides up swiftly again, and with it a rumble of artillery. And only out of the far distance, as if they came up over forests and seas, I hear words dropping down, words that gradually sort themselves to a meaning, and then penetrate into me.
"Uncle Carl sent the sausage,"
says the voice of my mother amid the faint roll of the guns. The words reach me on the very edge of the shell hole into which I am sliding, and with them there appears a smug, self-satisfied face, and disappears. "Ah, him," I say sourly, and my voice sounds as though I had a mouthful of wadding. Weariness is swilling around and about me so. "That silly arsehole." Then I fall, 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 and the shadows leap toward me, sweep over me in long rollers, dark and darker. But I do not fall asleep. Something has gone that was there before, that steady, light, metallic clinking. Slowly I grope my way back into consciousness and open my eyes. There is my mother, pale and horrified, staring down at me. "What's the matter, mother?" I cry, jumping up in alarm. "Are you ill?" She shakes her head.
"No, no. But to think you would say such a thing."
I reflect. What did I say then? Ah, yes, that about Uncle Carl. "Come, mother, you mustn't be so touchy." I laugh in relief. "After all, Uncle Carl is a profiteer, you know, isn't he now?"
"That is not what I mind at all," she answers quietly. "But that you should use such expressions."
Then I remember what I did say in my drowse, and I feel ashamed that it should have happened before my mother. "It just popped out of me, mother," I explain apologetically. "It takes a while, you know, to get used to not being at the front any longer. Our language was a bit rough out there, mother, I know. Rough, but honest." I smooth down my hair and button my tunic. I start to hunt for a cigarette and observe incidentally that my mother is still looking at me. Her hands are trembling. I give up my search. "But mother," I say in astonishment, putting my arm about her shoulders. "There's really nothing so very bad in that. Soldiers are always like that."
"Yes, yes, I know," she protests. "But you too..."
I laugh. "Me too. Why, of course." I'm about to explain, but check myself and remove my arm, for something has suddenly dawned on me. I sit down on the sofa to sort myself out. There she stands before me, an old woman with an anxious, careworn face. Her hands are clasped, weary, toil-worn hands, with a soft, wrinkled skin where the veins stand out bluish. Hands become so for my sake. I never thought of that before. There was a lot I did not think of before. I was too young.
But now I understand how it is that to this withered little woman, I am something different from any other soldier in the world. I am her child. To her, I have always remained so, even as a soldier. In the war, she has seen only a pack of wild beasts threatening the life of her child. It has never occurred to her that this same threatened child has been just such another wild beast to the children of yet other mothers. My gaze drops from her hands to my own. In May 17, I stabbed a Frenchman with these hands. The blood ran nauseatingly hot over my fingers, and in a panic of fear and of rage, I stabbed again and again. And when the Frenchman, choking, clapped his hands to the wound, I could not stop myself, but stabbed through his hands too, till he sagged down like an emptying tube. And afterwards, I vomited, and the whole night through I wept. Only next day was Adolf Bethke able to comfort me. I had just turned 18 then, and that was the first attack I was in. I turned my hands over slowly. In the big push at the beginning of July, I shot 3 men with these hands. They remained the whole day long hanging on the barbed wire. Their limp arms would fling upward with the blast of the shell explosions, as if they still threatened us, and sometimes too as if imploring us for help. One of them had snow-white hair, and his tongue lolled out of his mouth. And again, later, I once threw a bomb at 20 yards that tore the legs off an English captain. He screamed terribly. He threw back his head, his mouth wide open, and propping himself on his rigid arms, his trunk reared like a seal. Then rapidly he bled to death. Now I sit here before my mother, and she is on the verge of tears because she cannot understand that I should have become so coarse as to make use of an improper expression. "Ernst," she says gently, "I have been meaning to say this to you for some time. You have changed. You have become very restless." "Changed," I think bitterly. "Yes, I have changed. What is it you know of me now, Mother?" "A mere memory, nothing but the memory of a quiet, eager youth of the days that are gone." "You must never know, Mother, never know of these last years. Never even wonder what they were like, and much less what has become of me. A 1/100th part would break your heart. You, who tremble and are shocked by the impact of a mere word, one word that has been enough to shatter your picture of me." "Things will be better soon," I say rather helplessly, and try to comfort myself with that. She sits down beside me and strokes my hands. I take them away. She looks at me grieved. "You are quite strange to me sometimes, Ernst," she says. "Then you have such a look that I hardly recognize you." "I must get used to things first, Mother," I say. "I still keep feeling as if I were here merely on a visit." Twilight is gathering in the room. My dog comes in from the passage and lies down on the floor in front of me. His eyes shine as he looks up at me. He, too, is restless still. He has not settled down yet either. My mother leans back in her chair.
"Just to think you have come back again, Ernst."
"Yes, that's the main thing," I say, and stand up. She remains seated in her corner, a little figure in the twilight, and with strange tenderness, I see how all at once our roles have been interchanged. Now it is she has become the child. I love her. When did I ever love her more than now? Now, though I know I may never come to her and sit beside her and tell her it all, and so perhaps regain peace, I have lost her. Suddenly I feel how alien and alone I really am. She has closed her eyes. "I'll get dressed now and go out for a bit," I whisper, so as not to disturb her. She nods.
Yes, my boy, says she.
And after a while, softly,
my good boy.
It pierces me like a stab. Gently, I pull the door to.